We understand more today about the impact of trauma than ever before. It makes counselors like Melissa Spalding and Susan Freitag even more important. They help us deal with these issues that impact our lives. Today, the first of a two-part episode as we go inside the world of counseling and help understand each of us how trauma may impact our lives. Melissa, let's start with a definition, if we can. Trauma. How do we best define that?
What a loaded question.
Good place to start, right?
It is kind of complicated because for some people, trauma looks very different. We talk a lot in our line of work about big T trauma and little T trauma. And both have some pretty significant negative impacts on our brain and how we go through the day-to-day. Big T trauma is what most often people associate as trauma of, you know, having a really severe car accident, maybe military experience, like, you know, really big things happen in your life. And then there's little T trauma, which is maybe on a smaller scale, but again, still just as damaging of like maybe some neglectful experiences with a parent. Bullying could be a host of a lot of different things that people don't always associate as like, wow, that did have a really big impact on my life and how I feel about myself and how I feel about relationships.
Most of us then, with that definition, most of us would have had multiple small T traumas.
Absolutely.
In mm-hmm. life, but I don't think most of us would think that.
Right, right. You're absolutely right. And I think it's one of the things that a lot of times we purposely try to avoid using that word at first, because when you use that word with someone, they immediately, like Melissa was saying, will think about those big T traumas. But there are so many things that can impact us on a smaller scale, depending on like, well, I say smaller scale, but it could be, you know, you might consider that a smaller scale, depending on like maybe when it happened, even developmentally. So something that might have happened, say a move, may impact you a little bit differently when you're, say, starting high school. So, you know, yeah, just basically keep kind of an open mind on that definition. So,
does trauma affect the brain in a chemical or developmental way?
Yes. It's one of those things that, again, depending on the type of trauma, like say if it's chronic or, you know, ongoing, it can certainly absolutely change the brain.
You're saying chronic, so perhaps ongoing child abuse.
Exactly. That's a really good example that can not only change the shape, but change chemical, you know, how the chemical balance like you were speaking of. Because when you're experiencing that, obviously you're going to be in that what we call that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn response. And it is hard to deal with that on a long-term basis. You know, it's what we call the adrenaline dumping. You know, typically you would expect to have some kind of release. So say, you know, in the wild, you have somebody, you know, like, or an animal coming at you, you would expect to be able to, you know, run at a moment's notice. But if you don't have that in our normal, hopefully, day-to-day lives, what do you do with all of that? So it's like the, you kind of stay in that hyperactive, hypervigilant mode of like always being, say, on and aware of your environment a lot of times. And you may not even realize it.
It seems like that is an important distinction, Melissa, because a lot of times we think about these types of things in the world of feelings, and mm-hmm. there's a feeling,
yep.
if we can, there's a feeling that we control our feelings.
Yes.
That we have the ability to say, okay, I've compartmentalized that and I've put that over here. But if we're talking about chemical impacts and impacts on development, that seems deeper.
Yes, very much so. And one of the things that you see in people's experiences, they might be an adult, and then they get faced with a trigger or something that reminds them on a like body memory kind of level. They might not even have an active like memory of, yes, this is why this bothers me. And internally in their feeling and body processes feel exactly like they felt way back then, even though maybe 20 plus years later, that it still can have that very visceral reaction. And sometimes we can be aware of that and what triggered it. And sometimes we're not. Sometimes we don't exactly know, why am I so upset or reacting like this to this situation?
It also would seem to be a factor, especially with children, and understanding how they are going to react, again, not on a feelings standpoint, but on a development standpoint.
those children that might be impacted by trauma?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. And they're going to show it a little bit differently than, say, an adult would. With children, quite often, they may not be able to articulate how this experience may have impacted them, but you're going to see it in their play a lot of times. They're going to have an increase in perhaps nightmares. Their mood's going to be different. They may be a little more withdrawn. So, yeah, it's different.
Which makes me think that, you know, so often, what is our reaction when somebody is having difficulty? How are you feeling?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It may not come across. Mm-hmm. They may not be able, would this be the case, mm-hmm. to audibly tell you how they're feeling, but there's an impact there.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Because you're right. That's a hard word. Even for adults, you know, how are you feeling? You know, a lot of times we have to stop and think about it, you know, versus what are you thinking? It's much, much different.
Melissa Spalding and Susan Freitag are our guests. We're talking about trauma. Melissa Spalding and Susan Freitag are with us. They are counselors who work in our community to help those who are dealing with trauma. When we say an evidence-based approach to treating trauma, what do we mean?
Those are approaches that we have in therapy that have been well-researched, documented to be effective, kind of held as a gold standard in our profession. Is these are the go-to things that really do help folks process and work through trauma.
What are some examples?
A big one that we use, both me and Susan, is EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a way to use like the physical mechanisms of how your brain works to process and resolve trauma.
Does this work, Susan, with both the big T and little T traumas we were talking about a few moments ago?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, it does. Yeah.
What are you trying to get the person involved to think about to deal with when you're doing that?
Mm. A lot of times they may pick, say, a memory that was traumatic, and it's basically like trying to help change maybe their belief about that particular incident. Like, for example, I am bad, which is something we'll hear from like trauma from like, say, childhood, for example. And then pair that with like the emotion that you're feeling even today, plus where you store that in your body. And we try to bring that together and help them, for lack of a better word, kind of process or digest that material, because it can be a lot, even if it's been years ago.
Does the brain heal from
yes.
traumas?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the coolest things about what we do and how our brain is made. So we know that trauma has physical effects on the brain. And when we go through things, it changes the way that our brain works. And doing EMDR, for example, and other therapies really help the brain heal and work differently and better.
Obviously, we know there are a lot of people who turn to other ways to try to heal, or maybe better said, to try to cover up the trauma and pain. Are those, I don't want to say successful, but do people turn to that because momentarily it turns off some of the things in the brain?
Absolutely. What you just said was what I was thinking. It helps in the moment. But long term, not only does it not help, it can make things worse, in fact. Yes.
How so?
It becomes a crutch. And then that person, it's almost like putting it on pause. And you don't really allow yourself to kind of heal or work through. And then you take that plus couple that with, you know, life-to-life stressors or maybe even something else that might be, whether it be big T or little T trauma, to impact that. Well, quite frankly, you're kind of like building up on and you're going to just get worse over time.
Melissa, what happens to a person who doesn't deal with these traumas?
Well, we survive. And sometimes the things that we use to survive, like Susan was just saying, aren't really healthy. And they might be different types of coping skills like substance use or self-harm. Could be some other ones like excessively working or keeping, you know, your brain so occupied that you aren't able to like think and process and be in your body. Sometimes it can be overdoing things. That can create a lifestyle that is very busy and stressful on other terms.
So it might not just be, say, drugs or alcohol or something like that. It could be what we might look at as good traits, but you're doing it to cover up a trauma?
Yes, yes, absolutely. First thing, for whatever reason, popped in my mind, it could be like exercise, which obviously is healthy and something that we all can benefit from. But if it's something that you're using maybe to an unhealthy level because it does help in that moment and you're maybe not dealing with it in other ways, then that could be unhealthy, or say shopping, or, you know, that in itself is not like necessarily bad, but it can certainly be something else we could turn to.
Melissa Spaulding and Susan Freitag are with us. Are we doing a better job as a society of understanding trauma today?
I think we're getting there. There's definitely a lot more research that has been done in the last several years about the way our brain works and how trauma affects it, and then what treatment modalities are successful in really working with that. I think we're also getting better at opening up the door for people to be more willing to seek support and help and work through those things. I think we got a long ways to go still of being more socially supportive of people and their mental health, but I do think we're getting better.
Time, you know, you've seen it where counseling was considered maybe more taboo. And I think as it's getting to be kind of looked at as like, you know what, we all can benefit at one time or another from counseling through that plus psychoeducation, I think that is helping. You know, I've seen EMDR get put into like television shows, and I think that helps kind of, you know, expose people to it and also ask the questions of like, what is this?
And yet you still have people who say, just rub some dirt on it and let's move on. You know, just like the skin knee that we got when we were 8. How do you respond to that as two that do it every day?
I think when people say things like that, sometimes like the intention is really good behind that and wanting to like support someone and like, you got this, you know, you can. But actually it feels very demeaning to hear things like that for folks who are really struggling and doing all they can to keep going, and to just be like, oh, suck it up, like keep going, is really hard to hear. And so I think it would be better if we kind of responded more out of a supportive, I'm really sorry that that happened. What can I do to help support you working through that?
Do either one of you feel there is a risk, perhaps on the other hand, that people use trauma as an easy way to explain poor behavior, and instead of dealing with it, that becomes a crutch, just like we were talking about with drugs and alcohol? I don't know. I wonder that.
I think it certainly can. Maybe not intentionally kind of be that. I think oftentimes people are really scared of doing that work, or have these kind of core beliefs around like, it's not really possible for me, I don't think I could handle it or do that kind of thing. But certainly I think it can be a thing of kind of denial, or kind of, oh, put it out there of like, and then I don't have to do the work and change that.
And I wonder too, if it kind of looks that way because maybe more and more people are getting, you know, therapy or whatnot, or are talking about it. So it may seem like everybody, you know, has it. I've seen this with different diagnoses, not just with PTSD, that it's like, oh, you know, I have
it's
this.
Chic, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
As crazy
so,
as that sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Susan, is there sometimes a feeling that I can handle this, I can take care of this, I need to exercise more, I need to just let it go? Is that the way a lot of people start in trying to deal with these issues?
Oh, absolutely. I think that is how people start. And it's not to say necessarily that people that have experienced trauma before necessarily need to, you know, go to counseling, for example. But as long as you are working through it, and you can certainly try these other approaches, maybe talking to a friend, you know, opening up someone that you can trust. Like you said, maybe other self-care, you know, certainly is healthy and good. Exercise, meditation, those kinds of things. But if you find that that's something that, you know, you're noticing that things aren't getting better, maybe they're getting worse, or if you think like, oh, you know, what if I have PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, then certainly, you know, that would be a time where I would seek professional help. And you can start with your physician, you know, your primary care doctor for sure as well.
Melissa, is there still a resistance to go seek mental health among some people?
I think so. Again, I think we're getting better. And there's more of an openness to that as we see things like on TV and, you know, it's social media, things like that. But it is a big step for folks to like walk in the door for the first time and sit down and allow themselves to be vulnerable with someone about something that, you know, is very emotional for them and feels very scary. So I think it is a big step for people to get to that point where they're able to do that.
And if you step back for a moment and you think, especially my sense is that one sex over the other, but typically are reluctant to go to the doctor about medical issues. And so there is that reluctance there. The reluctance seems multiplied when you're dealing with mental health. Fair?
I think that's a fair statement. Absolutely. Because it can be a little more intimidating, especially because when you think about traditional therapy, you tend to think of like, you know, sitting across from each other, and that can really be traumatic in and of itself, I would imagine, too, especially like you said, for men.